All right, everybody. Well, this week, Paul and I are going to discuss our top five reasons why we want to pay dividend-paying whole life insurance premium until the day we die, or at least as long as contractually possible. So what did we talk about today, Paul?
Yeah, we talked about how the process of IBC, specifically the tool of whole life insurance, gets better with age. You know, we plan on making more money in retirement, not less, right? So we want a place to put that money. It makes generational loan origination, right, easier. We don't want to constrict our wealth growth ever. So we want a place to put that money. And then the last thing is we want to be prepared for windfalls. And that will go full circle, right? Those windfalls will make that next generation and the generation after's loan origination much easier. And it gets better every single generation, no matter what. We also discussed how I can't see anything because my eyes are not working good today.
That's what happens when you retire.
I know.
You just retire, go downhill. It's all downhill.
Just going downhill. Anyway, enjoy the episode. Appreciate you guys.
Hey, I'm Dave.
And I'm Paul.
And this is the Wealth Warehouse Podcast.
All right, we're back, Paul. You all set to move or what?
Yes, we pretty much got rid of most of our furniture. You know, I'm sitting at our dining room table, which we're taking. But basically, all the bedrooms have been emptied of all the beds. We gave away Anthony's mattress, or he sold Anthony's mattress. And
it's weird that people buy used mattresses to me. Because don't they say the weight of a mattress doubles after like a couple of years? Doubles.
Well, we have the waterproof. We always have the waterproof covers on them.
Okay,
right? So you don't sweat into the bed; you sweat into that thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You might be right, but anyway, it's we're in that transition time, and it's whatever. It's crappy, and it's going to get hot. It's going to be so starting next week. It's going to be hot as hell.
Oh yeah,
and I'm sure the movies are going to love that. But luckily, they're not going to have a lot of furniture items to move. There'll be a lot of just packing up our stuff inside the house, right? And then, you know, a load day or whatever, however they're going to do it. But so,
Well, at least you only got to move one more time. Well, I guess technically two, right? You got to move into that temporary place.
It's furnished, so permanent. It's all of our stuff that we are bringing is going to go into storage, and then it'll get delivered once we're able to take possession of the new house.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, so I had a conversation recently with somebody, a shared client, a podcast listener, and this will kind of lead into what we want to talk about today. But he'd done a lot of research, so it's great. You know, especially a podcast listener comes in, they usually have done a lot of research, a lot of listening, and maybe a lot of listening to different sources. And sometimes that requires a little bit of clearing up some misunderstandings or misconceptions, or kind of like that old quote, it ain't what you don't know, it's what you think you know that just ain't so.
Some unlearning needs to occur.
Some unlearning. Generally. Yeah, like one of our previous episodes, some unlearning. Mm-hmm. So one of those things was this intentional, and some people promote this intentional cutting off of your premium, like you're intentionally planning to pay less premium 10 years from now, or maybe even 5 years from now, which to us makes zero sense whatsoever. And if you design the properly correct, the policy correctly, you can choose to cut the premium, but it's not going to be forced on you, right? So there's some unlearning that has to be done there.
Yeah, I don't know. I was actually posting last night on that Infinite Banking Facebook page about this very topic, and I've never understood it. And the only reason that I think I can remember receiving from somebody, and it might have been the administrator of the group, I don't remember who it was, but they said, you know, if you do that, the internal rate of return of the policy goes up a little bit.
I don't care.
It's really not a valid point. Like, I don't care if I'm getting, you know, 3.89% in a policy over the life of the policy, or if I'm getting 3.79. I don't care.
I don't care, because it has nothing to do with Infinite Banking. Page 3, this has nothing to do with rates of return.
That's right. Yeah. And it you know, it's, you know, you're putting less premium in the policy too. So I think, you know, you're affecting your overall control over the banking function over the long duration, for sure.
Yeah.
You are, and you're interrupting compounding forever. So anyway, if you get a policy from us, it's not going to be designed like that. Could you do that? Could you reduce your premium arbitrarily at year 20 or year 15 or year 10? Sure. Just stop paying your PUA or pay less PUA. But why would you do that? Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. But you have options. You're not going to be forced into something that you don't want to do. So, you know, we titled this episode something like 5 reasons I want to pay premium until the day I die. You know, and now we like to use the term graduate instead of die. So we'll use that. But, you know, everybody knows what dying is. only people who've read the book knows what graduating means.
That's right.
Yeah. So, well, let's talk about that. Why do I want to pay premium until the day I die, or technically until age 95 or age 100, depending on the policy, the longest I can pay at any particular company? And maybe I plan to live longer than 100 and I'll be forced to stop paying premium at some point late in my life. But up until then, I want to pay premium every single year that I'm capable of paying premium. And we got 5 major reasons why. There's plenty more, but we'll just focus on 5. So the first one, because it gets better every single year. And there's nothing I can do about it.
Right? Nothing you could do about it.
No.
Other than stop paying your premium and surrender the policy. That's the only thing you can do to make it worse.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing you can do to prevent it from getting better. It's kind of like we use this example. Nelson used this as this example of flying a plane. Every mile a plane flies, it becomes more efficient because it gets lighter, right? It's burning fuel, so it gets lighter. Therefore, it's more efficient, assuming the winds, the environment remains the same. But it's also going to act like a headwind at the beginning that turns into a tailwind. It starts propelling you faster, further, even more every single year.
Yeah, I just thought of this. I feel like the capitalization phase of when you have a new policy and you're starting to pay premium and you're paying it for the first 7, 10, 12 years, that's kind of your climb out.
Yeah.
Right? You're burning a lot of gas because you get climb power applied, right? Whatever that is. I don't know. And eventually, though, you're going to reach 32,000 feet, let's say, and that's your cruising altitude, right? And you're going to be entering the most efficient stage of the flight during that time. We're at our cruising altitude. We've got our tailwind, let's say, hopefully. Sometimes you'll have a headwind. It's unavoidable. But you're going to be cruising, burning gas, getting lighter. And then, you know, toward the end of life of that flight or your age 100, let's say, or maybe 121. Wow. Imagine if you lived that long.
Right.
You will be the most efficient at that time.
Yeah.
Financially, all of it, the policy, all of it.
And you'll be guaranteed to have a tailwind. At some point in your policy, that headwind from the beginning after the climb out is going to shift to a tailwind, and you're going to be showing 250 knots true airspeed, but your ground speed is going to be 500.
You'll have a severe tailwind.
Yeah. Yeah, so you'll be...
In a good way.
Yeah. So that's probably the biggest reason is because... You know, if I've owned a policy 20, 30, call it 40 years, which, you know, I got my first policy at 30. So when I'm 70, that policy, every dollar I put in, I should have checked the in-force illustration and see what it predicts. But every dollar I pay is probably creating $5, $6, $7 in cash value. Why would I want to stop putting in a dollar to get $7 back?
You wouldn't.
You wouldn't. I would never find a way to pay that premium. Right. Yep,
and we've
also, Paul, loan me 10 grand for this premium payment. I'll pay you back next month.
Yeah.
You know, I'll pull it from the 70 grand of cash value I just created.
That's right. Yeah. You'll never stop doing that. And a lot of people, they get caught up on like when the policy like breaks even, like meaning when all the premium you've paid into a policy, when you have the same amount or more of cash value available to take as a policy loan. That always becomes like a thing people focus on. And I don't really care. I just open up an all-base policy with a certain company and it breaks even in year 12. But I don't really, but it's really, I don't really care because I know it's going to get better no matter what. It's just going to be a little bit slower in the early years. Then that's okay.
Yeah. But, you know, and it gets easier after you have, you've had some other policies in place for a few years. You start the next policy. You're not so concerned about, you know, that early growth and maximizing that.
Now, I you know, personally, I'm using my more mature policies that are older for my, those will handle my liquidity needs, my opportunity needs, and the newer policies, in fact, the last two, opened up one in January, it was 70% base, opened up a new one just the other day, that's 100% base.
Yeah.
Nice. There, there has to be a reason for my behavior.
Yep. and it's not because you're an idiot.
Right.
Right.
Not on this topic.
All right. Next one, faster, funnier. The second reason I want to pay premium for as long as contractually possible or until the day I graduate is I plan to make more money tomorrow than I make today. And my capital needs to reside somewhere, right? Nelson says that your capital must reside somewhere. I'm going to need somewhere to put my capital. So why would I want to cut that off and not have anywhere else to put my capital when I've got something that's incredibly efficient?
Yeah, your behavior is not going to change. I love how you put that in our notes here. You know, we were talking earlier, are your parents the same in retirement as they were during their working years? And I thought for, you know, a millisecond, yes, they're exactly the same.
Yeah, same for my mom.
Same behavior.
Yeah.
You know, very, my parents are very homebody-ish.
Yeah.
And
my mom's still a very good saver and still generous with her money, but she's a good saver and she doesn't spend a lot. That hasn't changed.
Right. And the mindset of, you know, when you practice IBC of, you know, the idea that, oh, I'm going to make less money in retirement. Well, why? Like, yeah, take the next step
why would you
in the
accept
thought process
that?
Here. And why would you accept that? That sounds terrible.
Right.
Right? That sounds awful. Why don't you, you know, dedicate 5 or 10% of your time to maybe learning how to kind of reverse that kind of American trend? That's just that's what everybody just assumes. Oh, I'll just make money. I'm going to retire and make less money. Well, that sounds, again, that just sounds terrible. It doesn't sound like a good plan either.
Yeah. You know, this really goes back to Nelson's principle, don't be afraid to capitalize. Like, don't be afraid to capitalize today and tomorrow. Oh, I'm not afraid to capitalize during retirement, but because by that time, my policies will be so mature, like we already said, I'll put in a dollar, I'll get on some policies $3 back, on some policies $5, $6, $7.
Right. Yeah, it's all mindset too. And I think once people can realize, hey, the policies really are that good.
Yeah.
They really do get better with age, no matter what. That I think people can start to shift that mindset to, oh my gosh, this is really, you really should be going all in on IBC as a financial, not a strategy necessarily, but as a way of life.
A way of life.
It's a way of life.
Which takes us really to number three. It makes family loan origination easier every year. So what do we mean by that?
Yeah, so how big of a pain in the butt it is to get a mortgage? You know, car loans are fairly simple to get, but you still have to go through a process. And we've brought up examples on this podcast as of late where our clients have been able to take advantage of automobile financing opportunities where they got, you know, $2,000 off the vehicle if they used the dealership's financing option. And then they paid off the car with a policy loan, get the title of the vehicle, and now they own it free and clear as far as, you know, credit people are concerned. Yep. But the mortgage process is a totally different story. And getting a HELOC, if you have a lot of home equity, that's a totally different
story. Or getting a business loan.
getting a, oh my gosh, how many people have we heard complain about their SBA loans that they got in like 2020 or 2021 or something? Those are all blown up now in their faces.
Or what about college tuition? You know, if you want to do that, sure. It's probably easy to get, but there's some handcuffs it comes with.
Yeah, for sure. And we're going to cover a few more of these things, but we're going to bring this one back full circle back to this one at kind of the end of the podcast. But, you know, I've been talking to some people about IBC as of late, some friends, and then some people we just meet, and this loan origination topic comes up, and I'm here to tell them, I was like, see those kids right there? Their children, for sure, assuming they have them, will never use a commercial bank for their lending needs unless they want to.
Yeah.
My children will use it less than I've had to, which was up to this point, 100% pretty much, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, every generation will be able to wean themselves off the commercial banks, which brings us back to one of Nelson's rules, don't do business with bank. That's the whole point.
Yeah. Right. Don't do business with banks. Create your own family bank, family legacy, so the family can borrow from the family bank. And, you know, you'll have, of course, that could be, that's an entire episode all by itself. How do you do that? How do you safeguard it to make sure people are repaying their loans? Are you going to really repossess, a family member's car if they don't make a repayment? You know, how is it collateralized? You know, what's guaranteeing the loan? So that kind of stuff. I think that would be a great episode.
Yes, obviously the behavior needs to be there. You know, we've talked about it, but if I'm not going to lend money to a family member that's not, one, no, practicing the even a banking concept, that's a requirement. Right. You have to be to participate in the family banking system. You have to participate in the family banking system.
Yeah. And you've got to be able to repay that loan. I'm not going to give you $1 million loan to go build a house for you and your brand new bride at the age of 26 when you're pulling in 30 grand a year. It's not going to happen. Oh, we can't hear you, Paul. Your cord came undone. So, nope, can't hear you. So don't do business with banks, right? Set your family up for success to make that easier every year for your family. Like Paul said, man, his grandkids are not going to use the commercial banks.
Back.
Are you back?
Am I back?
Yeah, you're back.
Okay, I'm back. Yeah, this thing, I think I might have to get a new, the cord is starting to wear out on these things. So folks, a little side note here, Dave and I were talking about how we really like these microphones and everybody has them. This is the ones you see on all podcasts out there in the world.
Well, but stop moving it around. It's going to come undone again.
I know. But they made it with like whatever that micro USB or
really
whatever the heck that
connection
is. And it's not a USB-C, which is more durable, I think. And it's just, I'd never unplug this thing, but it's still starting to wear out after whatever, 3+ years of use.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry about that.
All right. No problem. I picked up your slack.
You picked up my slack. I had a good point to make and I can't remember what it was now because I'm so upset about this microphone.
Well, if you think about it, we'll come back to it, but let's go to number four. The fourth reason we want to be able to pay premium for as long as we possibly can is because we don't want to limit our wealth growth. Why would I want to intentionally limit the amount of wealth I can create over my lifetime? Right. What rules does this go back to?
Don't steal the peas.
Yeah. Think long range. Like all
long range.
Right. We don't want to steal the peas. We don't want to just consume. I want to contribute. And like Paul already mentioned, what your habits aren't going to change when you hit those passive income years.
And again, we already touched on it earlier, but the mature policies later in life, you know, when every dollar of premium is making $3, $4, $5, $6, $7 of cash value, you would never want to interrupt that. It's fairly obvious that you wouldn't want to interrupt that, right? Again, going back to the earlier discussion about why would you want to RPU or stop paying your PUA or reduce your premium at year 10 or year 5 or year 4, it doesn't make any sense, yet people are out there doing it for unknown reasons.
You know, but if somebody has the concern or they fall on hard times during those passive income years, there are ways to not have to pay premium. So again, you're not contractually obligated to pay out of pocket. There's other ways to get that premium paid. We have a whole episode on that titled, you know, how do I pay my premium in retirement?
In retirement, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we cover the non-forfeiture options that all whole life policies enjoy.
Yeah, but if things go the way that you want them to go and you are planning for them to go and preparing for them to go, then you're going to have capital to put somewhere. You're going to need a place for your capital to reside. And this is hands down going to be the best place you could possibly put it during those years.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Dave, that I didn't say think long range when you were expecting me to. So also, side
note, put your glasses on.
I was having trouble with the eyes this morning. Like, I don't know what, like, they're better now as the day's going by, but I couldn't see anything like up close this morning.
Yeah.
And we thought about wearing glasses, but we didn't do it. So I'm better now, though.
Good.
I could see it.
I'm glad. But, you know, these plans of cutting your PUAs off at 5 years or 10 years or reducing the term insurance early, which reduces your premium that you can put in without it mecking, are all things that intentionally limit the growth. Well, I can just go get a new policy and put money into there. Well, can you?
Maybe you can. If you opened up a bunch of convertible term policies or a large convertible term policy, maybe you can.
Maybe.
And that's the other thing that's aggravating in that whole thing is you're not going to be insurable forever. We have had cases where I think you got somebody in their 70s, early 70s insured or underwritten.
70 years old.
Yeah, the oldest that I've had, I think, is 60, 64, 65. And gosh, it was the quickest underwriting I've ever seen, honestly. There's nothing wrong.
Yeah, this guy breezed through underwriting too. I couldn't believe it.
I don't know if the companies look at it differently because the gap between the premium and the death benefit's not as great as it is for a, you know, 25-year-old
at risk.
Yeah. They've made it this far. They're going to make it for, you know, who knows? But yeah, there's not the net amount of risk is lower, I suppose, from a death benefit perspective. And maybe that's,
Because the death benefit is so small relative to what somebody 30 years younger would receive for the same premium dollars.
Right.
But the cash value still accumulates.
That's important.
You can still bank with it.
That's important to understand, right? For someone who's older and thinking about implementing the infinite banking concept is that it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And if you ask, what is this going to cost me? That's the wrong question to ask right out of the gate anyway. You're not doing this because of that. It's a function of premium, a function of cash value. That's what we're trying to do here. So,
right.
Don't sweat it.
All right. And then the fifth reason, like we said, there's a lot more reasons, but the fifth one that we thought of really right off the top of our heads was prepare for windfalls. You want to be able to prepare for windfalls. So in retirement, passive income years, there are things that a lot of people encounter, like they sell a primary residence that's paid off and they downsize or they move to the beach or a cabin or whatever.
Yep.
And that's a huge windfall, tax-free for most people. So where are you going to put that? Well, if you've been contributing and you've been taking loans and whatever, maybe you've been taking loans and not repaying them during your passive income years for a number of years, you've got a large, you've got a large outstanding loan that you can fill back up. Big hole in the ground, you can fill it back up with that windfall. There's also inheritance. Maybe if you're lucky enough to receive an inheritance from your parents, we'll see. I don't know. I know I'll get something.
It won't be from life insurance.
It won't be from life insurance, unfortunately.
Right.
Yeah. But
it'll be more complex to get to it, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yep.
Maybe.
Yeah. So it's a great place to always have the ability to put more capital into something.
Yeah. And again, like it goes back to somebody. And, you know, for those of you who are going to really practice, and we have some clients that are really going to dig into the family, the whole idea of family banking, generational family banking, I should say, that this can refill a policy. If I don't have an outstanding loan or Tammy doesn't have an outstanding loan, maybe one of my kids has an outstanding loan. But we're using the system of policies that we've created over our lifetimes to practice family banking. So it's going to go somewhere, right? That doesn't mean, like, if I lent the children money for a mortgage payment, that I'm all of a sudden gonna, oh, I just paid off your mortgage for you. No. Those amortized payments are still coming to mom and dad every month.
Yeah, that's retirement. Maybe it's that's new, passive income.
And that's passive income for me. Or maybe it's new premium on somebody. You know, whatever it might be, right? So that's how I would.
But think about that. Who would you rather be paying a mortgage payment to, a bank or your parents? Like, how cool would it be for you right now to be supporting your parents during their passive income years by making a consistent monthly payment to them every month? That's just passive money for them to enjoy. Like, what a great
thing. They get what they want, right? They have extra income, and I seemingly got what I wanted, this house or some other thing or whatever it was, or business opportunity.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
It's great.
And it really is. And the other thing is, it's not only brilliant, but it's easy, right? This is easy. And Nelson talks about why we open up policies on children when they're very young, firstborn or whatever. And, underwriting is simplified at that time, right? So we guarantee that those children and those parents are going to have a place to put capital for that person's entire life. Right.
Yeah.
So it just makes everything simpler. And if every generation practiced IBC at the level that we and our clients are practicing it, this will get easier every single generation.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you start them young.
And more profitable.
Mm-hmm.
Far more profitable.
Yeah. Well, great. So to recap, the five reasons that we want to be able to pay premium until the day we die. One, it gets better every single year. Two, I always need somewhere to put capital, and I plan on making more tomorrow than I make today. Three, you can create the family bank, make family loan origination, rid your children and certainly your grandchildren from the commercial banking system permanently. We don't want to limit our growth in cash value or death benefit. And we want to prepare for windfalls, have a place to put capital when it comes our way. Whether we expect it or not, we have somewhere to put it. So I think that's pretty good. There's a lot of other reasons we could go into, but right there should help you understand if you're on the bubble or you're researching or you're hearing, hey, only do 10 pay or a 20 pay, or only do PUA for 5 years and then stop. Hopefully this helps you reconsider those arguments.
Yeah, and feel free to chime in the comments with, you've heard our five, chime in with other reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you don't mind, leave a review. Leave a 5-star review or a 1-star. Don't do anything in between.
Yeah, we only like 5 or 1.
Yeah, and you got to leave a comment if you leave a 1. That's the rule. Yeah, with your real name.
Oh, I never do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, everybody, have a great week. We'll talk to you next week. Until then, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. If you'd like to have a conversation with us to see how you can become your own banker, or if you have any questions or topics you'd like us to tackle on a future episode, please send us an email to davidandpaul@theibcguys.com.
And subscribe and leave us a review if you're on Apple. Follow and leave us a 5-star review if you're on Spotify. And please share this with your friends. We'll see you next week.